Okay, great. Welcome, everyone. I'm going to open the Hood River City Council meeting for May 11th. It's 6 o'clock. And our first thing is business from the audience. And we have one person who should be connected up who would be able to give us their information. I don't see them on here yet, but Jonathan's going to help us with that.
Yeah, that's correct, Mayor. I'm looking for Peter Bernelson. I don't see him in attendees just yet, as you saw. I'm just making sure that Columbia Network is not hit.
He may be listed as Columbia Gorge Climate Action Network. Do you see that?
I do. If you are in attendance, would you please raise your hand? I guess that might be the best way to do that, huh? That was not very clear.
Yeah, Columbia Gorge Climate Action Network, I believe that is him.
Yes, that is me. Peter.
Great. Thanks, Peter. You can go ahead and give us your testimony, business from the audience.
All right. So I've got four quick good news things, bike-related things to update you on. Number one, we're in National Bike Month. Have you been able to get out and get on your bikes? It's really very enlivening. And I did a ride to Oak Grove this afternoon, and the cyclists outnumbered the cars. And at one point, there was an electric wheelchair going down the road. So encourage you to get out. The air is beautiful and clean. The second thing I wanted to talk to you about is that we, as you may remember, we're planning on Streets Alive on May 31st, but we had to pivot to other things given that that wasn't going to happen. So we came up with this treasure map idea, which uses clues from the big art around town, the history panels, and a Parks and Rec feature that has the name of a certain council president. I hope I'm not giving away too big a clue here, but encourage you to take part in the treasure hunt. I think hopefully included in your packet, you were able to see the map, and it will be coming out in the Hood River News tomorrow, at least an article about it. And finally, we have received a $500, before I go into that, just to finish on the ODOT grant, on another thing that we had planned on getting were the pedestrian in-street crossing signs, and I think that was also included. We're going to buy two of these, and we'd like to give them to the city to use where you see fit, but we just would like them back if and when we do another Streets Alive event for the day. And they're designed to go in the median strip and alert people coming to town that we do take our crosswalk laws seriously here. And then the final thing is we've teamed up with the next door, Latinos in Action, Walmart, Streets Alive, and Thrive to and Providence Hospital to purchase 5 bikes from Walmart. They're giving us a donation of 5 bikes. And we're going to go out to some of the underserved communities. These are children's bikes. Providence is providing helmets. We have benefactors providing locks. We're going to give away five bikes based on a coloring contest. That is the final thing in your packet. So that's what's happening in terms of Bike Month, and that's what I had to say. Any questions? All right.
There's Gladys has something. Go ahead, Gladys.
Yeah, so thank you. I reviewed your documents, and as usual, they are beautiful to look at. But I unfortunately didn't see a Spanish version of the scavenger hunt, and wondering if you already, it's just in the process of being translated. But will there be one that's available in Spanish?
There will be one. In fact, there may be already. It was being translated. And I should also mention kind of another piece to the scavenger hunt is we're going to be producing four short one minute videos, one a week, once we get started. And those will be both in English and probably a Spanish voiceover. So yes, thank you.
Great, thank you, Peter. Thanks for the update on all of that and all of those. It sounds like some great things that are happening for the city. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and if the city wants to amplify that, you know, on your webpage or communications, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, if we want to, Rachel can get a hold of you if we want to get some of that information to get out to the public.
Okay.
Did you have anything, Rachel?
No, nothing to add, Mayor.
Okay, great. So I think, is that the only thing we had business from the audience, correct?
That's correct, Mayor.
Okay, great. So we'll go ahead and open the work session. Do we have any agenda additions or corrections?
No, we have none.
Okay. So the city's response to COVID-19 is the discussion item on in our packet. And there's a couple things in here. There's just a discussion in general. And then there was also some information that we got from staff on the possibilities of targeted funding that might happen in next fiscal year. So let's just do the general discussion first. Is that what we should do, Rachel, you think?
Mayor, if I might, so information is changing really quickly. So I thought what we might do is start first with kind of some of the business outreach that we've been doing, and the economic development group is putting on a business adaptation session on Thursday. And we've also been doing some outreach about how the right-of-way might become compromised with some of these new physical distance requirements, and how we might be able to partner with the business community to potentially work through these. So Dustin was going to give an overview of those efforts at a very high level. Next, Will would give an update on the business recovery efforts and the recovery package that you just mentioned. And then finally, we could talk through the emergency declaration. If you'd like to start with that, we'd be happy to do that. Is that kind of where you want to start, Mayor?
I think that since the information that you are going to give us is an update, an up-to-the-minute update, and there is so many things that are changing so fast, it's probably best to have that information first, because our discussion might even change after we hear everything you have to say.
Sure. Okay. Great. So again, last week you asked us to put together some initial ideas regarding economic recovery, and so this will just be an update. We are looking at this point for just real high level input, any sideboards with each of these discussions, so that we can refine them and, you know, continue to bring them back to you. So I'll let Dustin give a high level overview of how we might be able to assist with some of the right of way constraints that we anticipate as businesses adapt to physical distance requirements.
Thank you, Mayor and Rachel. We've been doing just some cross-departmental teamwork with Public Works, Building, and Planning to evaluate some of the alternatives and to share those with our stakeholder and partner agencies, including the Chamber, Downtown Business, some of the regulatory agencies such as the state, to look at just some program approaches on how we could use some creative use of the right-of-way, both the city and state right-of-way. So we have to kind of make sure that our state agencies are involved. Using that both in its physical space, making sure we have the right signage in place, working on consistent signage, consistent messaging. Also looking at, as a service agency, we do have a lot of technical expertise. We have architects, engineers, planners. If there's anyone in our kind of portfolio of staff to help support some of these businesses, we want to make sure that we're looking at tapping into those resources as we reorganize space, both in the public domain as well as individual businesses. Looking at some of our permitting processes, is there anything that we do now that we could help expedite things? Are there processes that we could speed up or make a little more responsive here, still keeping in line with some of the laws that are in place? And really there's an emphasis to coordinate with our partner agencies to make sure the programs that we're developing are syncing with other sweet spots of other agencies that are more versed in what they do, making sure that our programs harmonize and making sure that we're on message with all those groups. So, really in our area, again, the first approach is the control of the right-of-way and opportunity to use that and make sure that we have, we have some buy-in from all our different stakeholders on how that's accomplished.
So what do you mean by control of the right-of-way? Do you mean a road? Do you mean a sidewalk? Do you mean, what are you talking about? If you could give an example.
Yes to all those. How do we use the sidewalks? How do we organize on-street parking? How do we use on-street parking? Is it, it's always been on-street parking. Do we start looking at things such as more emphasis of loading zones? Do we start using the parklet idea? How do we start, again, it's just creative and different uses from ways that we've used them in the past. And is there an opportunity to make a quick responsive changes in these areas to support, again, some of our business community and allow the public to maintain some of the distance in this new organization and environment we're working in.
Oh. I guess I'll go. Sorry, thanks, Mark. In your conversations with local businesses so far, how have you seen them desiring or wanting to use sidewalks or parking spaces, another right-of-way area?
Well, we haven't got to the chamber and the organized level yet. We've had some conversations with individual businesses, and we've been responding to people reaching out to us with their ideas. They're different. And so I think the idea is just making sure that we're not just hearing from individual interest in what they think is the best, but sharing those with our kind of agency partners to make sure that they've kind of developed some level of consensus. So clearly you're going to start talking about the public domain and how it should be used. We're going to get a whole lot of different inputs. So trying to synthesize this and again, get some agency feedback is really one of the first things we put on our list, is we need to make sure that this is going to be effective and that our partners buy into it as well.
And the purpose of it is to help with social distancing so that businesses could function to some degree when we start to open up a little bit more. Correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Just okay. In response to the current situation, and I guess what we anticipate is a phase one scaled in approach to really support the business community and the public as well.
Mark?
Yeah, so can you give us an idea of what the next couple milestones are and the timing for those? It seems like soon, I assume.
Yeah, I think we were definitely looking by the end of the week. I think I have promises made for tomorrow. Planning commission packets have gone out, just so you know. So this is an immediate priority of getting some of these things in order in anticipation of what we saw with county action and with what we expect coming in the week. And again, as things continue to change and move, it's something that is top priority for staff.
Yeah, and I would say that, you know, we know that businesses are still trying to figure out what it means for them as well. So having that ongoing dialogue is going to be really important so we can manage this together.
Jessica?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, with my job in the economic development world, we've been talking about, you know, I wonder if some of the partners have said, I wonder if any of our cities or our counties are thinking about ways they can make changes to really support the social distancing and the businesses. And I was happy to say, I know that Hood River is starting to think about it. And I just, so kudos to the team here. And I appreciate you trying to be creative.
Tim?
Thanks, Dustin. Can you just give us an idea of what agencies you're coordinating with and what consensus would look like? I mean, there's some things obviously that we have control over, right? And then there's some things that we need to coordinate with other people on. Can you just give a general feel for that?
Yeah, definitely. When we think about some of our downtown and some of our main right-of-ways, we think about ODOT. You know, Oak Street, the D Highway 281, Cascade, parts of State Street. those are some of the areas you start thinking about when we talk about some of our business climate and business community. Those are all state controlled facilities. So that's a key partner. We'll definitely be looking to bounce ideas off some of our economic development partners, such as MCED, Chamber. Although they're not a government agency, that is definitely a business support agency. OHA, the Downtown Business Association, non-for-profits that we've mentioned before are all just a few of the segments.
Thank you.
Other questions? Eric?
Oh, hi, Dustin. So I guess I'm just curious what you're exactly looking for from us. Are you just reporting to us? You're looking for ideas? I mean, like, an idea is, once the governor says it's okay having restaurants on sidewalks, is that the kind of things, so they're outdoors as opposed to indoors? Are those the kinds of things you're thinking about? But I guess I'm just curious what you're looking for from us in terms of, are you looking for ideas or are you looking just to give us an update?
Mostly update, but if there's things, there's sidebars and input that the legislature, we always want you to feel like you have an open channel to us in conversating those things. If there's things that you have heard your constituents have brought to you, if you as a collective body have a great idea, we're open to hearing them. But really at this point, it has been just an informational update to you all. So it's, we're open to ideas always. I think we won't shut those down from anywhere, but there was no needed direction right now unless there's something you want to offer in terms of what you want us to look at or places that you believe we shouldn't go. So there's sidebars on those matters or things you want to pass along, we're open to hear them, but no direct asks tonight.
Got it. Thank you. Yeah, I had a conversation or two with some restaurant owners thinking, what if we allowed some opening on the outdoor areas, which would be sidewalks, which would be city. So you see that in some of the other urban settings in the non-COVID environment. And I'm not advocating it necessarily. It was just an idea that someone shared with me.
And go ahead. Let's, Gladys, go ahead.
I would like to start the conversation or that we take time to have a conversation in regards to what can we do to support to keep our constituents safe during this time. I am all for businesses trying to open and supporting those ways that we can make sure that they're cleaning effectively, you know, that we have deliverables that we can definitely give. But we should have the conversation of what are we prepared to do to ensure the safety of our community, our constituents, in regards to masks. You know, are we going to really recommend that folks wear masks or not? And I know that these are really hard conversations, but I want to remind folks that our county plan that was given to the governor is just a plan to say we're prepared for our locals and what we have here. We're not prepared for tourism. It will put a strain on us that we are not able to handle. So I would love to, again, start having that conversation of what can we do and what are we prepared to do to ensure the safety of our community.
So on that note, Gladys, I think that the next section we're going to talk about, or maybe the two more sections away, we're going to talk a little bit about short-term rentals and phase one for the county and some different things that are going to be happening. And I think those conversations would be in that realm versus Dustin's realm of what he's talking about right this minute. But we definitely need to talk about it, but I think it might bleed over into that section. Tim, did you have something else?
I agree with what Gladys is putting out there. I mean, it's, you know, one of those things is actually, are we actually going to prioritize, you know, the actions that Dustin is talking to these other agencies about such that it does, you know, accommodate and prioritize the safety of our constituents. So I think it's, you know, I think it is something that giving Dustin that direction up front is probably useful. I mean, personally, I think that we should be prioritizing the physical distancing rules. So, you know, as you go through and you talk about these, I think we all got an email from about the TAP 64 incident, those types of things where you're having crowds of people congregate. You know, and it does kind of get into a kind of like an enforcement issue. Who's going to enforce these things? I'm not really sure quite yet.
Rachel?
Yeah, we are sort of getting, you know, into a number of different realms, and that's okay. What I would suggest is if I could answer the, I'll try to answer the enforcement question, because I think that'll continue to come up. And then maybe we'll move through to Will's presentation, and then we can sum it up. And then we'll come back to any questions that don't get answered. But in terms of enforcement, what we've heard from the county is that enforcement really will be up to the regulating agency. So that's going to be a little confusing for folks. The county regulates, you know, food and beverage, lodging, and pools, and the Department of Agriculture regulates the supermarkets. You know, law enforcement is here and will respond. In fact, Neil, Chief Holsey can report on what they did this weekend. They gave some verbal warnings, you know, really focusing on kind of that cooperative effort with the public, education, and voluntary compliance. But yes, enforcement is going to continue to be an issue. But that's kind of the short answer to who does what.
I think, you know, weaving that information into our actions is going to be important going forward, because, you know, if we set up all these scenarios where we're going to have these physical distancing incentives, I guess, in place, and they aren't followed, and nobody knows who to go to actually say that this is a problem, that will continue to be an issue that we need to address. And, you know, I don't, you know, I've heard that OSHA is in charge of like doing some of this enforcement, but how do you get in touch with OSHA, and what, you know, what type of you know, what type of response time does that entail? Or does it fall? I'm sorry, I'm just rambling on.
No, you're absolutely correct. There is a role for OSHA in here as well, and I omitted that. And again, sidebars around this are going to be really helpful. So the way we're approaching it is that businesses are going to need these physical distance requirements. So if there's going to be signage, it would be nice to have consistent signage throughout the city. And if we're going to allow use of the right of way or the sidewalk for, you know, lining up for a store, we're gonna try to put something in place that will be consistent and appealing. Dustin mentioned the idea of using parking spaces. We haven't made a decision on any of these, but we did want to let you know what conversations were going on so that you can provide us the really important feedback about what the sidebars are, what you're hearing, what you'd like to see, what you don't want to see. So it's all very helpful.
I think that one of the things, and Dustin already mentioned that you were working with OHA, Oregon Health Authority, and I think that that's key for this because they're all about the safety. You know, they want businesses to open, but they're all about the safety. And so, you know, if they say, well, you need to line people up on the street. Well, if you line people up on the street and you're too close and people can't pass on that street, or you put people eating out there and then people can't walk down the street because they're too close to people eating, you know, I think Oregon Health Authority would be telling you that. So I'm glad that they're involved in the conversation because I think they're very important to be in on the conversations that we're having about this kind of stuff.
Yeah, and the businesses are being directed to the Oregon Health Authority guidelines for, you know, how they need to craft their own reopening plans. And we will also need to keep in mind the ADA requirements in terms of sidewalk distance, et cetera. So, you know, it's complicated, but we'll be working through it. I think Councillor Saunders wanted to.
Right. Megan?
Slightly jumping back to enforcement, but I mean, I feel like given the number of complaints we have been getting or hearing from other folks, and I assume that's only going to grow as we start any sort of reopening. Have you heard anything from the state about their actual capacity to respond to these things? Because my read of certainly ODA and other folks is that they can't handle normal levels of complaint response. And I'm wondering if there's a ramp up of staffing or capacity there.
Not to my knowledge, but I'd be happy to follow up and get something back to council on that.
I'd love to hear something because I imagine it's going to become a point of contention in this community and every other one.
Okay.
Anything else on what Dustin has brought forth for us?
Thank you all for your input. Please let us know anytime you have things to share. We're all in this together. So thank you.
Thanks, Dustin.
Now I'll turn it over to Will, and you'll recall we have $250,000 in the proposed budget for a recovery package. So we're looking for high level feedback and sideboards so that we can refine and scope this. And as we mentioned, information is changing. So perhaps Will can update you also on the funds that were just recently announced by Business Oregon. So turn it over to Will.
Thank you, Rachel. Mayor and City Council. So this has to do with, as Rachel said, the $250,000 that's from the one-time diversion or suspension of diversion of tax revenue for the Heights and Waterfront districts. And that allowed one-time, one-year diversion is a special process allowed in state statute, but it's still contingent on approval by the Budget Committee and City Council. So this all has to go along with that caveat that we need to wait for the budget process to know whether or not we can implement any of these ideas. But if they are implemented, obviously we want to hit the ground running. If it is approved, we want to hit the ground running and have something fully formed and ready to go on July 1st, because the need is so front-loaded with this pandemic. So I had Jennifer Caden and Haley Ellett help me to put together some some ideas and flesh out some concepts, some sort of key dynamics that we wanted to make you aware of while we get your feedback and input on what this local economic recovery program could look like. And what I'm really talking about is dollars, of course, but there is some overlap with Dustin's area, and we've been coordinating closely. He's been in on my meetings and vice versa, because obviously if he has some ideas about opening up the right-of-way or something like that, maybe we have some funds to make sure that the tables and things that are put in the right-of-way are nice, uniform, you know, and we help out with some grants. So there is certainly overlap between the two of us. But he's kind of taking the city operations and regulatory side, and I'm taking the money side. Sort of some of the key dynamics are, there's been a lot of stimulus, as we know, over $2 trillion in the CARES Act and additional stimulus coming. It's done a great job at blunting the initial impact over the short term. And we're seeing that even when we get to the Q3 financial performance report, you'll see we're not seeing any spikes in unpaid utility bills through April. You know, so some of the macro indicators are saying that these programs are doing a fair enough job, but there's certainly blind spots. And that's where local programs have come in, being more flexible and filling in those gaps. And some of the gaps right now that have been outlined are sole proprietors that can't take full advantage of the Paycheck Protection Program, and people who are undocumented or migrant workers here as well, who also can't take advantage of unemployment benefits. So that's one area. And so there's nonprofits that assist in that area. And then some cities have been doing grant programs for small businesses for some of those people who haven't been able to take advantage of the CARES Act funding. And then there's also just direct assistance for those people who maybe were gig workers or some other sort of type of worker that is unable to work right now, but isn't taken care of by unemployment. So those are sort of the three different areas where we could focus this $250,000. So one of the discussions would be, do you want to hit all three? Do we want to focus on one? Is there some proportion thereof? And I put it as an example in the staff report, doing maybe $50,000 to nonprofits, $50,000 for utility assistance to individuals, and $150,000 to small grants to small businesses. Not because that's recommended, but just as an example of what that proportionality to discuss might be, or where people might say kind of where they think the city's funding should go. I think the other piece of this is just how dynamic the situation is and how quickly changing it is, and why that feeds into a staff recommendation to not overly engineer this on the city side of things. So for instance, since putting together this staff report, you know, we noted in there that at the time we didn't see that MCED had a loan program specifically targeted at businesses impacted by COVID. They've since started one. Since I've noted that disadvantaged businesses, sole proprietors are being left out, the state has come in with a Business Oregon $50 million grant program to address that issue. So it's really sort of like whack-a-mole here. And so what I think be best is just broad goals rather than specific funding criteria. And then we get the money to the closest to the problem. And so we've identified what we think are the best local entities to handle this for us. And that's if getting assistance directly to individuals, Mid-Columbia Community Action, Mid-Columbia Community Action Council. You know, this is their bread and butter. This is what they've been doing for decades, is directed targeted investment from government, from federal, state sources. They've been administering our low-income assistance program for the utility, for our utilities. They're best adapted and have the financial systems and acumen to get money to individuals. If we wanted to target nonprofits that helped maybe migrant workers or out-of-work restaurant workers, people who are supplying PPE, things like that, then we really think that the the Rapid Community Relief Fund would be the best avenue for that money. That's kind of an offshoot of United Way, but they've built a specific council and they've been turning over their funds on a weekly basis. Money that comes in is out the door within 7 days. They meet every week on Fridays and then the money goes out on Mondays. And then thirdly, we think that the Chamber of Commerce would be the best entity to help us do a small grant program. They have the ear, you know, they have the lowest sort of distance of separation to all the businesses out there. And I think they would be most able to hear, you know, read, understand, and interpret the applications and the actual need of these businesses better than obviously the city and I think any other entity locally. And in addition, if they were to, if we were to allow any sort of administrative overhead to administer this program, there's almost even a follow-on benefit of the chamber said to furlough three of their staff members. And for instance, they would be able to call back one of those people to help administer this program. And that's kind of added bandwidth when here in the city, we don't have any staff member kind of idled right now that could be applied to this program. Yeah, so those are pretty much the sideboards and the recommendations that we've come together with. But what we're looking for is just the ideas of if this $250,000 is funded, what are the sideboards or additional information that the council would want to know and have?
Great, thanks, Will. That thank you for putting all that together and doing the research on it. So it looks like right now, just to recap what you said, this money wouldn't be available till next fiscal year, which would be July 1st. And that's only if it's approved by the city council / budget committee. And so we would just want to be ready if we were going to use it or use part of it early on in July. Or it may be that we could target some of it, but we might take a wait see on where we are financially come July 1st, August 1st, September 1st type thing. Although it'd be great to get it out the door if people need it right away. But, you know, as we've looked at budgets so far, there may be some reasons that we need to keep it. So I just wanted to start the conversation with that and, you know, see where people are with where you might want to use some of this money, just in big general terms. Does anyone want to start? Megan?
I'm going to maybe just ask a few questions first. So in the staff report, it had talked about potentially the Urban Renewal Agency Board could actually take some other money and use it in their districts. Is that something that would have to also wait till next fiscal year, or is that something the board can do with this year's budgets?
We could probably, if it was kind of unanimously supported and urgent, I think we could do some sort of supplemental and reallocate from redevelopment projects to something like this in each one of the districts out of the accumulated fund balance.
Okay. Or
it wouldn't take away from this $250,000.
Okay. But, or it's something we would talk about Wednesday at the Urban Renewal Budget meeting.
Correct.
For next year? Okay.
Well, and just to clarify, you could talk about it on Wednesday, but we wouldn't necessarily need to, because with Urban Renewal, the money will be, is appropriated.
For this year, you mean?
In both years, you know, generally we just have a line item redevelopment projects.
So what does that mean, redevelopment project? What, I mean, what qualifies as that type of a project?
Yeah, it'd be anything authorized under the plan. So at the very sort of highest bar that we would need to get over is just check with the URA Council, Deborah Phillips, make sure that any relief program that we've thought up fits within the goals of each plan. And every one of the plans includes an economic development goal. So that's pretty easy to loop that underneath that goal if this is to help businesses remain, you know, through this pandemic. Deborah said, no, that's really a stretch from what was intended in the original plan. Then we just need to go through the process of doing a plan amendment.
Okay. Then, sorry, just two more questions before I'm ready for discussion, maybe. But I think you mentioned that, you know, administrative funds within this. Can we set a like maximum amount that would go to admin versus the actual assistants, or how would that work? Or where do you see that ballpark being of amount of money?
Yeah, when I was in talks with these folks, I kind of said, you know, I'm not in any sort of negotiation right now, but, you know, would 5 to 10% cover your work to make this happen, and just looking for general head nods. And I got, you know, there wasn't any shaking of hands, but got head nods all across the board that, you know, a 5 to 10% would be reasonable.
And then last, I feel like I've seen a few times that there's potentially some match money available from Business Oregon, but I haven't found out a ton of information. Is that true, or what do you know about it? Or
yeah, I listened, and thanks to Jessica Mehta for forwarding this information for our webinar that I listened to today. So I have to think through how we would take advantage of that. Because those funds have to be spent by June 30th, and we have to apply for them by May 18th. And it's also $50 million might seem like a lot, but you spread that over an entire state of Oregon with 3.5 million people, and we're only talking about a couple of dollars per head. And so, you know, if we were to figure out what our proportional cut of that is, you know, I'm hard pressed to know whether or not it really actually moves the needle.
Jessica?
The Business Oregon funds too, it's a one-to-one match, just to add, and only $2.5 million is allocated right now, but there are gonna be other phases. It's not clear if the other phases are gonna be exactly the same. So if we don't apply by May 18th, there could be an opportunity.
And I misspoke, yeah, not 50 million, five million.
Jessica, I got an email from Kelly Holloway, and she was saying EDA funds, is that a different pot of money?
We do, I was gonna share this in my council call, but there's new EDA funds, Economic Development Administration funds that will be coming. There's some that will be coming directly to the economic development districts, but that's going to be like technical assistance, planning as a region for how we recover and respond to this. It's not, there could be money in there for public works projects, which I mentioned to Rachel, but it's not going to be like business grants. Oh, there's a new pot of money for our revolving loan fund to supplement the loan program that MCED has. But it's loans, it's not grants or direct payments to any of the types of people that Will's been talking about.
Others? Tim?
Yeah, I guess when I think about, you know, some of the folks in our community that could use assistance, I start thinking about folks that are going to need food. So having some type of support for like the food bank, thinking about, you know, looking towards next winter when heating costs start going up, some type of assistance with heating bills, those types of things that, you know, for the people that are really not able to make it through that. And also, I think that Will had mentioned with respect to Dustin's dilemma or effort to try to coordinate with businesses to make this work for everybody, some type of allocation of funds to help with that effort so businesses can actually function. But, you know, I mean, I think somebody's got to need to be a voice and be thinking about the poor people in our community so that they're not falling off of the people's radars. But those are my thoughts.
Gladys?
Because I work with poor people, Mid-Columbia Community Action Council also has these requirements in order for you to be eligible for their benefits. So I would be very careful in regards to putting money there, because we're also saying this is where the money's at, but you have to jump these additional hurdles to get to that money. So I don't know if maybe at this point they can let go of some of their requirements, if they have some sort of flexibility, I would be all for supporting money going directly there, because absolutely we do have our elders in the winter, those who have, you know, our low income in the winter who cannot afford their heating. But again, being very careful that we don't want to administer funds to an agency that already has additional requirements that they require folks to have. With the money that could be going to MCED specifically for businesses, I mean, I think I look to you to say, what would you give as a recommendation for us for these funds? Is it still the 100,000 and then split it 50 for nonprofit and then the additional 50? Or it's hard for me to just come up with a ballpark number. So can you just give us some guidance on that as far as what would be comfortable amounts?
Yeah, and to address Mid-Columbia Community Action Council, and this actually goes for United Way and the Chamber of Commerce, all three of them said, you know, if we were to give them a significant amount of funding, you know, in the $50,000 range plus, they will design a program to our specifications.
So then would they also, if we did Mid-Columbia Community Action Council, would they also be willing to take on helping someone navigate to get to food? So connecting to Food Bank or the Columbia Food Gorge Food Bank, could we also add that in there so that we could cover heating, but we're also heating living expenses as far as rent and then covering food?
So, well, I kind of want to report on what's happening within the EOC as well. There are other agencies, and Counselor, you might know based on your work, there are other agencies doing that work too. So I think when Will was saying, let's talk about kind of where we're wanting to focus, that'll help us design the program that you want and work with our community partners to design the program that you want. So what I've heard so far is, you know, vulnerable populations, low barrier, you know, no barriers, is that the right word? But few barriers to accessing the funds, kind of focusing on basic needs for the social service side of it.
Others? Mark? Eric?
I guess. I'm going to actually share opinions instead of ask questions, but I think I'm struggling with all of our local small businesses, our local nonprofits, obviously our local low-income individuals all need what I suspect is significantly more assistance than $250, it's fine. Can give, and so I would like to support all of them, and I also worry that if we do too low an amount in any or all of those, we are just not, we're throwing money at a problem and not actually solving it. And I don't know what the right amount of money is. And so some of this might be, I'm clearly going to push for some other urban renewal district money to help some local businesses as well, and then I feel like I am more comfortable with the spread. But if, I don't know if there's a good way to measure like what's an effective amount or what the, I mean, the need's going to be huge, but like how to know that 50,000 for individuals is going to cover a good chunk of our community, or I don't know how this, what the scale is, or if we can even come up with an idea of knowing that. But Yeah, I would like to help everyone. I don't know what's realistic in that. But I do think we have a responsibility to try and support all three of those entities in some form. And I definitely agree with the, like, this money clearly needs to have some lower barriers to access, or otherwise we're creating the same problems as, you know, the PPP and some of these other programs.
Yeah, so some context from my discussions with these groups. I asked them, you know, what amount of money moves the needle? And it's important to know that there are a lot of programs out there already. So we're plugging into a patchwork, and we're trying to fill in, kind of like sand filling in a patio, right? So that's where $50,000 really can make a big difference, is because we're finding those folks that aren't getting help from federal energy assistance and, you know, and the state unemployment. And so we're filling, that's where, but as far as like to relative size, you know, for the United Way Rapid Relief Fund, their, one of their biggest donations has been from Google for 35,000. We do 50,000, right? Now we're bigger than Google. So
it's helpful to hear.
Yeah. So if that helps.
I think that scale is helpful to hear of what the rest of the community is working with.
Gladys?
You know, I also wanted to add that if we were to give directly to the Gorge Community Response Funds, which is that United Way dollars, we're talking about how do we keep our locals safe? Well, by having them wear masks. And if we can provide masks for those who are low income that cannot afford to buy 2 to 3 masks at a time, and not only them, but their families, we're talking about children, you know, spouses, that would also just benefit our community, knowing that folks have masks and can keep themselves and their family safe when they are at the, you know, out and about at these restaurants as we start opening more businesses.
Jessica?
First, I was just going to clarify, I know there's a lot of acronyms and slips of the tongue, but I think it's important to say that we are not talking about giving any of the city money to MCED. I just want to say that. I do think that, I think this is, again, wonderful for the city to come up with this idea, and I appreciate the team that came up with the ideas. I do really like the idea of filling, answering the gaps, and I agree with the gaps that Will and your team have come up with. I like the analogy of the sand in between the pavers. And I think that's one of the things that I've been struggling with, is like, how do we know if it's going to be enough? But I think the answer is it's not going to be enough, and whatever we come up with is not going to be, it's going to help some people and it's not going to help some people, and we're going to get criticized for not doing enough, but I think we got to do something. So, I don't know that I have other specifics on your ideas, other than to say that I support the idea of splitting it up among those three groups.
Mark?
I just want to add my 2 cents, I guess. I think that this whole fund idea is wonderful. I thank staff for kind of outlining what things. I completely agree that we should plug into existing programs as opposed to trying to stand up a program ourselves. I mean, we could easily shoot ourselves in the foot trying to design the perfect program when we have these partners that we should be taking advantage of. I think that even though this is a lot in our budget world, it's not very much in the scope of the thing. So I've been thinking that it's sort of like we can provide an EpiPen to this thing, you know, we want to be able to use it when it's needed to where it's needed most. It's not going to be the overall solution, but it's a shot in the arm. So during this discussion, I've been thinking that our role as a communicator of all these different things that Will went over and Rachel went over and Dustin went over is so valuable in that we'll be able to see when one of these programs that's locally run is having a problem, and we'll know when to apply our EpiPen worth of money to the thing. So I guess my recommendation is that we don't say 50K for this and 50K for that. We acknowledge that, you know, here are three types of needs that we want to meet, and you know, go over what Gladys, you know, reinforce what Gladys and Tim mentioned. But we basically wait until, you know, make the relationships with these people and then wait until there's an immediate need for us to be able to respond to. I think we can do it quickly once we have stuff lined up. And so, as opposed to saying, we're going to give you this much money, and but maybe they have an influx of funds from someplace else right now, we can be later on our feet, I think. That makes sense?
Eric?
Sure, thank you. I'm happy to offer my two cents as well. I appreciate this very well-intended discussion. As I listen and read the materials, concerns that come to my mind, I guess, are several. First, it sounds like, you know, where are we going to get this money? It sounds like we are essentially diverting it from an urban development source that or channel of some kind that you know, won't be getting those funds. So to be comfortable with this, I'd need to understand more about that and how those allocated dollars, you know, would otherwise go to that, how we're going to sort of find our way through that. We do, as you know, working on our budget committee, we all know that generally speaking, the budget is going up. We have a lot of things we're doing there. The budget items we've gone through so far show the budget going upward. I know we've decided on the Heights Urban Development to increase our budgets for that. So I guess I want to always maintain a sense of realism with respect to the funding of this. And I do have I'm unsettled a bit when it comes to diverting urban development dollars, if I'm understanding that correctly, to what would be more of a sort of social services spending. Additionally, I agree with a lot of the sentiments I'm hearing here that if we decide to move forward with this, the city itself, I think this isn't what we do. We're not set up to engage in social service allocations. We don't have the staff. It's just not at the core of what we do, and it's not our sort of source of expertise. So to me, if we are going to do this, it would be about selecting specific, you know, not a wide ranging sort of social goal, but think of very specific goals. What can we do that actually to solve a problem, a specific identified problem? And to me, it is a choice of your nonprofit. So we, you know, Fish Food Bank is a local respected nonprofit that has a clear mission that is achievable and is one that's in high demand. You know, so that comes to me, to my mind, as a highly reputable, deserving source. You know, the Chamber of Commerce could be another, and we could discuss the others, but to me, it's not about a wide-ranging program if we do this at all, but rather picking a partner that does have the sort of administrative competence to administer supplemental dollars in some way. And I also just have a general concern about wanting to keep our powder dry. We're in the black, and that is just such a blessing as a municipality. And as I see dollars going out the door, and we're talking about next year potentially, and I'm not sure exactly what next year, maybe that next fiscal year, when exactly that clicks over. But we are heading into very uncertain times, and there's a lot of deserving sources for funding. But to me, just sort of making sure we can always keep the lights on with our police and our fire, clean water, good sewer. I'm just uneasy about sending dollars out the door without a more clear understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. So I'm kind of just uneasy about it generally, but to the extent I'm warm to it, it would be about picking the right 501c3s who have established credibility in the community and who we can rely on to use these dollars appropriately.
Thank you, Eric. I think I want to almost echo Eric's comments word for word. I totally agree that, and the Urban Renewal Funds, just to go over the Urban Renewal Funds just a little bit. So the Urban Renewal District, the districts we would be taking this from, the money that goes into those districts to do that work comes from all the different entities, the library district, the county, the city, the school, all those different districts that collect taxes. And instead of those entities getting those tax dollars, there's an increment that comes out to do the urban renewal work. But all we would be doing this year is taking the money that the city would have put in that, and the city will actually get that in our funds this next year. And then that urban renewal district will add a year on if we need to later. So we just are going to take 1 year off and not collect money for that district or those districts. And then we'll add it on later instead of it being a 20-year time period. It'll be a 21-year time period. And we'll have this 1 year that all the districts, the county, the city, the schools, they're all going to get a shot in the arm basically this year. So that's where the money's coming from. It's not that we won't get the money. We'll just get it a year later. And we'll be able to use the money now, which is money we would have anyway if we didn't have an urban renewal. We would be getting that money anyway. So it is the city's money to spend regardless. It's just that the urban renewal district will be 1 year longer.
Sorry, can I just language with that because it made me uncomfortable? We are not taking urban renewal money. We are not collecting urban renewal for a year, but we are not taking any money out of urban renewal. And I just want to make that super clear to anyone listening.
Okay, that's correct. Can you clarify that, Will? Is that correct, the way Megan said that?
Both of your, actually, and Mayor, I couldn't have said it better. It was really well, you put it in very good, understandable, simple terms. We're just, we're putting urban renewal into this suspended animation as if it didn't exist for a year. And all the overlapping districts will get their funds as if all that money was in the general rolls. And then urban renewal will pop right back into existence the next year. And because we sort of put it in suspended animation for a year of collections, not activity, but collections, then it will just need, each one of those districts will last 1 year longer. So Waterfront may close down in 2026 or 2027 instead of 2026.
Okay. So, and I also think that the nonprofits, are going to need money. I agree with both Tim and Eric said something about Fish Food Bank, and I think they're going to need more money. And, you know, if we have another surge later, you know, a second round, then they're going to need it even more. I think the possibility of Mid-Columbia Community Action being a nonprofit that can distribute money, and maybe there isn't anyone that's taking advantage of the, or not very many people that are taking advantage of the water and sewer, but I think that Mid-Columbia Community Action Program is going to be looking into helping people with paying for those things soon, because they got a shot of money recently too. And so, you know, that might be something we could add to, or some other program through them. So that those are my thoughts on it. But I'm very leery about spending any money until we absolutely know that we don't need it to function.
Yeah, and I think the other piece there, Mayor, that I would add, there could be some more certainty in terms of what is reimbursable as well. Those conversations are happening at the state level.
Yeah, and I think we're going to know more when we get closer to the 1st of July. You know, if we go into phase one at the end of this week, I believe they just changed the dates for those things today. And they were saying we'll be in phase one for a week. And now they're saying, no, we're going to be in phase one for 3 weeks before you decide whether you can go to phase two, if you're ready for phase two. Did you hear that today, Rachel?
That's what I heard as well. Yeah.
Okay. So I think if we get through that and then, you know, possibly into a phase two, we'll see whether what our numbers are going to be, what's happening, how much, you know, what's Fish Food Bank doing? Are they good? Are there more people that are losing their jobs in 3 weeks, 6 weeks? So those are my thoughts. Anyone else?
So I think what we've heard so far is, you know, desire to plug into existing programs to potentially assist the most vulnerable in our community, as well as small businesses who are not being served. Also to invest in public spaces to accommodate physical distance, low barriers to entry, and to focus on nonprofits who are well established and can meet the need. And also, I liked what was said about being nimble and responding to the most urgent needs when they come up, or unmet needs when they come up. So I would say that, you know, those give us kind of broad parameters as we look at this, continue to look at this for the next couple of months. So I think we've got what we need.
Okay, great. Thank you. Good discussion, everyone. That was great. Thank you.
Okay. So,
you're next. Are you on, Rachel? Are you next?
Yeah. Sorry about that, Mayor.
Okay. No problem.
So, again, just with the county potentially receiving approval to move to phase one reopening on Friday, just quick update. I provided this at the budget meeting. We'll put together a plan internally for city operations. We discussed this a little bit in the budget, but just to let council know, we will be moving very slowly. We'll be following Oregon Health Authority guidelines. We're continuing to deliver all services remotely, limiting person-to-person contact, continuing safety protocols for employees in the field. And I do anticipate that facilities will remain closed to the public for some time. So that's just an update on internal operations. Happy to provide additional information. And then finally, the city emergency declaration will be extended with the opportunity for another review on May 26th. We'll continue to coordinate with the county and other agency partners on recreation and overnight lodging, and really have valued the thoughtful and cooperative approach that our county and partner agencies are taking to these issues. There have been several conversations. I know the mayor has been involved in some of them, and all agency partners are anticipating the opening of recreation to be slow and very deliberate and a wait and see. And really, this is, I think, an unprecedented cooperative effort with the public. We'll continue on with education and voluntary compliance as we just manage this risk collectively. So that's the only update that I have on the emergency declaration and city operations, but of course happy to answer any questions.
Eric?
Yes, thank you for that update, Rachel. I guess I had two questions with respect to our emergency declaration situation. The first, you know, obviously at our last meeting, we took the step to open up some of our internal city green spaces, you know, the neighborhood parks. And I'm just curious, number one, from a sort of a the city's perspective, perhaps the chief's perspective, is that going okay? It looks like it's going okay to me, but I'm just one set of eyes. And that's my first question. And my second question is, do you see or do you anticipate or what do you think the first step could look like with respect to our hotels? Obviously, the governor is going to have to be in the driver's seat there to some degree. But I'm just curious if we're even having a discussion about what a next step could be for our hotel closure when we get to the right point.
Thanks. Okay. Maybe I'll take that one first and then ask the chief to talk about kind of what happened at the waterfront this weekend. From our perspective, things in the neighborhood green spaces are going fine, but we did see some more people out. So I'll ask the chief to weigh in there. But phase one reopening guidance from the governor does ask citizens or community members to avoid overnight trips and minimize non-essential travel. That includes day trips outside the community where you live. Now, that that's what it says now. There's new recreation guidance coming out all the time, but everything we've heard says, you know, the gorge areas still remain closed, and that is the governor's guidance. So I think, like the recreation conversation, this has to be just an ongoing conversation with the county, with the lodging community, with Visit Hood River, to figure out when it's going to be right for Hood River to open those things. If I had a crystal ball, I would tell you what that looked like, but I don't right now. I think the thoughtful, deliberative approach that I've seen from these partners is the way that we have to go.
Right.
So
does Chief want to chime in on what he saw this weekend?
Yeah, go ahead, Chief.
How are you guys this evening? This weekend, I was talking to Rachel earlier. Starting Friday the 8th, we actually started doing foot patrol down on the waterfront in regards to people socializing and hanging out on the green space. We did see a definite increase in that. I think it was the downturn as they didn't realize, it was adamant in the statement that it was waterfront park was closed, but I think people just wanted to think green space and Hood River was good to go. So we had several times through the weekend that we had to go down and do foot traffic and foot patrol in that area. People are compliant. They tend to just mill from that area over into the port property, and then you just kind of push them, like, you know, kind of herd them along. So we didn't cite anybody, but people, again, were very respectful, very compliant in that. We did have to go patrol a couple times down at the skate park. We had a few issues there. Started actually fairly early in the morning, about 6:45. We actually got our first, you know, complaints there. So we went down there and dealt with that. And they were there a couple times through the weekend. But overall, as far as city property, the green spaces within the residential areas, absolutely no complaints whatsoever. Everything went well there. The only thing that I could say, Rachel and I spoke a little while earlier before this meeting, was the waterfront park. You know, how do we continue to educate and let them know it's green space, but it is closed the whole park. Because people do see people walking on the path on the backside, which, you know, from the roadway, it observed, you know, towards the north, it looks like people are actively hanging out there. But it, again, it's just the walk path, and it kind of draws people into the park itself, what, you know, some people had stated. So that's our biggest concern. How do we continue to educate that? We had a few complaints in the port property. Nichols Bulk Works been kind of one where young kids have been hanging out at those piers there, and I think they're just jumping off and swimming and such. You know, there was about 35 of those individuals Saturday that we actually had to tell them to move on. So just being good neighbors to the port, we told Michael if we saw some people, we would definitely address it while we're on patrol. So yeah, that's where we're at.
Thank you, Chief.
Yeah, thank you. Megan next. I was down there Saturday or Sunday. I was not down there Saturday. And I, you know, I saw people social distancing, but they were, you know, having a picnic on the amphitheater or having a picnic with their family group, not a large group, you know, 3 to 4, maybe 5 people. But they were definitely social distancing, but they were not walking through. And that was happening both at the Nichols Basin area and at Waterfront Park. So Megan?
Yeah, so this conversation is maybe the larger segue into, I got a number of comments and complaints from folks this weekend. A lot of it about the waterfront. I also went and drove past on Sunday. And there were, yeah, probably at least a dozen groups using the picnic tables and the picnic shelters and the you know, kids play area. and the Green, all of whom obviously walk past at least one closed park sign. And a number of which, you know, had the full on, the camp chairs are out and the picnic blankets strewn with food and everything of like, you've clearly been camped here for a long time and have not been moved on. That I think there needs to be a real conversation of, if we're going to have this park closed, we need to close it better than we clearly did this weekend, because the pressure on that park is only going to get worse. And if everyone is not respecting these signs, that's also only going to get worse. And so at some point we just have a completely full and open park without the restroom and without any management. Or we need to say it's closed and figure out, like, do we need to rope it off? Do we need to actually start citing people? Like, what do we need to do to get people to genuinely pay attention to the closure? Because I don't think it was super successful this weekend.
And I think there will be another large group meeting with the Forest Service in State Parks Friday. And I don't know, you know, Washington State Parks, Oregon State Parks, you know, the whole gamut of what's going to happen. And when they all say go, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to stop the floodgate if they all open. Of course, if they all open, then we might not have as many people here anyway, because we might not be the only ones that are open. Not that we're open now, but there will be more discussion happening with them later this week. Jessica?
Yeah, just from something that Chief Holsey said, it made me think that maybe one of the issues is having the trail stay open. That it looks like it's okay to use the park because there's people on the trail. And I'm not saying right now let's close the trail. I'm just saying that maybe that's like the next, you know, crowds lead to closures. Maybe that's one of the next steps. I also heard from some partners in Skamania County that there are quite a few non-residents in the county, and clearly walking around the trail closed signs and hiking.
Gladys?
I also want to add how disappointed I felt when I saw it on the news that there's a newscaster advertising Go to the Gorge. That's not what we want. And it's just disappointing to have such a partner like that, or just an agency like that, broadcast, head on over to Hood River. It's gonna be beautiful out there. And I know that there was a lot of work that was done in regards to making sure that folks clearly understood this is not an invitation to come to the gorge and come hang out on the trails. So I think just better communication with our agencies out in Portland that are advertising on what the weather looks like in town, and that it's not a green light for folks to come and visit Hood River.
Rachel? No. Yeah. I mean, our message was absolutely, that is not what the message was. And they took a piece of it and twisted it around a little bit, but that was not what the message was that we gave.
Yeah. Visit Hood River explicitly sent out a press release, and really appreciate Ashley's leadership to do that. I think the other article was the result of a different agency making some statements, and then they did go in, to their credit, and correct it over the weekend. So,
Rachel, is it possible to just change the physical marking of Waterfront Park to include, you know, much, you know, yellow tape and you know, try version two of closing that park, and then version three would be actually, if you went over the yellow tape, you're going to get a ticket. So.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Councillor, for that suggestion. Actually, the chief brought that up too, that maybe need to look at some additional signage here. And you know, it looks like it might be raining in the next couple days, but absolutely, as we get some better weather, looking at what we can do from a signage perspective is a great place to start. Absolutely.
I guess following on Mark's, can we go beyond some signage to actually like roping, you know, the main park area off, or does that run into some sort of legal problem?
Why don't we look at it? Yeah, I don't see why we couldn't put some caution tape around it if we can find that. So we're happy to take a look at that.
Rachel, do you mind? The only thing on the caution tape is people pull it down or they go under. It's really not a deterrent whatsoever. It's going to be more of a litter than it is going to be a purpose. If I had an idea, not to speak for Wade, but the events that we see go down there, I know the red or orange rubber temporary fencing. I don't know how much the city has, but as you see events down there, that's what they use. I mean, I recommend that as, in my position, that would be the best. You can't go under, you have to go over. So.
Great suggestion. Yeah. We'll okay. Take a look.
That probably would be way more effective. That just seemed a lot more invasive than the caution tape, but maybe we need to go there. So
I think if we do that and we see an improvement, we also need to look, just like with the parking, you know, the port put up the meters and then they moved to the city area. So if we do this, then we can go down to the event site and we can go down to the Nichols Basin and look on those days and see if we've got really, really a lot of crowding, because it's like, well, there's no caution tape or anything up down here. So we just need to be aware that can push the balloon into a different area. So we just need to look at that if that happens, and then, you know, talk to our partners about what they want to do or not do. I think that's, we need to just be in partners and in discussions with them about it.
So, yeah, I mean, I'd hope we're always communicating with the port and other partners. My understanding, their event site and everything is closed right now as well, correct?
Yes, but Nichols Basin is not closed. It just okay. Says crowds leads to closures. So you can go down there and you can sit and you can have a picnic on the sandy beach area or those little rock walls. That's not closed for picnicking or sitting. Okay. So I think it'll push people over there.
Yeah, Mayor, thanks for bringing that up. In our conversations with agency partners, that has been some of the concern with, you know, if only one place is open, then that's the place that'll get the crowds, and crowds are what we're trying to prevent. So be happy to talk to our agency partners about that and figure out if there's a way that we can navigate this together.
So, and I guess, I mean, that's maybe the bigger conversation of at what point do you reopen? I mean, if we're going to close the park, it needs to be closed. If we decide we want to open it because otherwise the balloon goes somewhere else, that's a different conversation than how do you keep people from using the closed park as it is right now.
Yeah. And I just think it is a conversation, whether we have it now or we just try it and then see what it does, and then like, well, it's pushing the balloon in another area, we need to rethink this or talk about it more. We just need to be conscious of it. And maybe if we have rain for 4 or 5 days, it won't even be much of a big deal. But once we get a weekend with a warm day again, then we'll see what it does. Eric?
So I had a question and then a comment. So, and they're unrelated, but I guess I think there's also just confusion still among the public about what's open relative to the actual water. So like the Spit, I think, is open, and Rachel mentioned that the Nichols Boat Basin is open. So both of those places, if they're open, they would allow a person to touch the water. Are we saying we can't get in the water? I think maybe having some greater, better understanding about that, because I have, a question in my mind whether we're allowing people in the water. I thought we were, but I'm not sure. And then unrelated to that is, I actually heard two different stories, and this is perhaps more with the county, because I think the city, I don't believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, even though there was some discussion of this. In fact, I think I was the one who brought it up at one point. But the city is not telling anyone you cannot drive to a park. But there are some, I've heard a story or two stories with, apparently there was a boy who has a permanent disability and another boy who has a temporary disability. And because of the car issue, they feel like they can't come. So I don't think anyone is saying on the city council is if you have a disability, you can't drive to a park if you're otherwise operating within our rules. So just because of that, it felt appropriate to just air that situation. If anyone disagrees, I doubt it. But I did hear two stories about folks with disabilities being wondering whether they could use a park because they were nervous about driving their car.
Yeah, so to be clear on that one, you are correct, Counselor. There is no, the city has not prohibited driving to a park. And we absolutely not. There may be some confusion with the county has closed all the staging areas for the forest, and you are not allowed to drive to those staging areas, but absolutely not.
Okay.
With regards to the water access, you are also correct there. Water access would not be prohibited from the Nichols Basin area or the Spit.
But if Waterfront Park is closed, it is prohibited to go down to the sandy beach and get in the water there.
The city currently has Waterfront Park and the beach closed.
Okay. And people were doing that this weekend, getting in the water there. I don't know how we're going to cordon off the water, but others? Gladys?
You know, I think it's also, I like the idea of fencing off the park to hopefully give folks another opportunity to learn and, you know, that you can't come to the waterfront park. But just in the last couple weeks alone, I think social distancing is something that is just hard in general. Even when you're at the grocery store and it's fully aware that you're supposed to keep your distance, you know, folks are still coming together. And I think it's realistic that we know we may not be able to prevent that from happening. Just, you know, throwing that out there. It's challenging as is just within the grocery store, or if you're, you know, going to somewhere like Pine Street or the farm stand, there's smaller spaces and it's going to be hard for folks to stay away.
All right, it looks like we've got some consensus on some additional measures to add to our arsenal for the parks and keeping the parks closed, except for the neighborhood parks and all the play equipment and access to the water. Do you have enough for that, Rachel and Chief?
We will continue. I think what I heard is continue the conversations with the agency partners, see if there's additional signage or fencing or something that we can put at Waterfront Park to make it explicitly clear that the playground and the green space remains closed, and then just, you know, report back. That's what we're going to continue to do.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So, Mayor, I didn't have anything else on kind of our COVID response in the new operational period. So, if there's anything else anyone has for me, I'm sure you'll ask. Otherwise, I think we could move on.
So, I guess, I mean, bigger than parks, and I don't necessarily have a direct place I'm trying to go with this, but, you know, especially after this weekend, it's clear to me, like, the pressure of folks not following the governor's non-essential travel ban, the pressure of folks in town kind of not really respecting the social distancing rules and guidelines is already growing. It's clearly going to get worse as the weather gets nicer, everyone gets more tired of these things. And I'm just wondering what is in our wheelhouse to be able to address that. I mean, I'm sure we'll continue to educate, but is there anything else we can do on our own or with our regional partners to really, force isn't the right word, although maybe I want it to be, of the, like, force people to actually protect themselves and their community, or our community if they're coming from outside of it, and limit the amount of infection. We've been super lucky so far. I don't think that's going to continue, especially if people keep acting like they did this weekend. And so I feel like something more needs to be done, but I just don't know. Most of it seems like it's a state level thing that we can't control, but I'd like to do something.
Yeah, I just in general, Megan and I have talked a little bit. I think a lot of it is state level, and if it isn't state level, you know, we don't have a travel ban. We don't have a barrier at exit 62, and you know, we can encourage people not to come. We can try and put out messages that we're not open. We can try and keep people 6 feet away from us, and some people are super good about it and very conscientious, and some people aren't. And I don't know, we can't force people into doing what we think is right or what they should be doing to keep everybody 100% safe. And I think that what we've been doing is we've been doing as well as we can do at this point. Under the guidance of the governor and the Oregon Health Authority. Does anyone else have any other input? Those are kind of my thoughts on it.
I think this kind of circles back to our earlier conversation about whose responsibility is it to enforce these physical distancing requirements, whether it be in the supermarket or whether it be elsewhere. So I think we need to be just cognizant and communicative about it. But I think you're right to some extent that unless there's some type of penalty for not doing it, then people are going to ignore it. And so I think that's kind of the, and you know, I'll say that I think there are a whole ton of people that are doing the right thing, but there are just some folks that are not. And so there needs to be some type of way to discourage those folks that are not doing that. As far as having people from out of town or out of state come into our community, that's going to be a difficult discussion. I think in some ways tied to the reopening plan for the county. And I think, as Gladys mentioned earlier on, I think what I heard from her was that the plan will accommodate us being able to deal with our own community, but it's not going to be able to deal with an onslaught of tourism. So, but, you know, it's just something that's we're going to need to discuss going forward. It's going to be really tough. It's a hard discussion.
It's a very hard discussion, but folks can die. Like, people can die because of this. Yes. And that's why whatever it is that we decide or come up with, it's folks can die in the end.
Yep. And that's, you know, you get to the point where, you know, I've pretty much resigned myself that, you know, if I see somebody without a mask on, I'll just say, you know, you should probably have a mask on. You know, maybe for your benefit, but for my benefit and everybody else's benefit as well. And I think we need to get past that kind of uncomfortableness because it really is that serious. And it's, you know, it's a matter of, it's almost like a matter of civility at this point in time for being uncivil. So it's really uncomfortable.
I wish I could say there was something that, you know, I had a magic wand that could get people to realize how serious it is and be conscientious all the time. And, you know, people forget sometimes. And other people are like, I don't have it. I'm fine. I don't have to worry. No big deal. It was just isn't a good attitude to have, but I don't know what to do to change their mind. Megan, did you have something else?
Well, maybe potentially before we move on from COVID stuff, I feel like we didn't we haven't really addressed it directly, but I just wanted to clarify, are we continuing the lodging restrictions for the time being?
I believe we are.
Okay.
I haven't heard any collective thoughts regarding that at this point. And I think that the next, if we open the county, if the county opens back up and we have 3 weeks, we'll probably have some idea what that's gonna do. And then we can assess that a little bit better and then, you know, see what we think about lodging at that point, because we'll be into phase one enough that we might be able to see if there's going to be a lot more issues with more cases. So I think maybe being in phase one, I mean, reopening, it's not really a good way to, what they're calling reopening. It really isn't reopening. It's just making sure that we have enough masks and our medical community can take care of what's happening here. But if we get a whole bunch of, as Gladys said and Megan said, out of town people coming in that are carriers, then you know we're going to have more than we can handle. So I think just some of that, just wait and see. The weather's going to get better. We'll probably get more people up here, like it or not, even with our rules in place and having a little bit more flexibility in some of the personal services that are going to open up for our people in the community. You know, going to the dentist, going to the doctor, getting your hair cut, those kind of things. We're going to see more movement, and then we're going to see what happens. But I don't feel comfortable with, personally, I don't feel comfortable with reopening short-term rentals, hotels, and motels at this point. I think it's unfortunately, even though we'll still have the stay-home order from the state, there are entities and places that are just waiting for us to push the go button on that. And I'm sure that the owners of those businesses are too. I don't blame them one bit, but there's, you know, people that want to start advertising that is happening, and encouraging people to come out, and we're not ready to encourage people at this point. That's my opinion.
I agree, actually, and that's a great segue. I just wanted to mention, Visit Hood River has been working, still preliminary, of course, on figuring out a marketing plan of when we're ready to have some visitors. How do you start that advertising without, you know, getting the immediate flood of what is clearly multiple months of pent-up demand and people kind of, you know, shaking the gates to get in as we speak? But figuring out kind of responsible tourism in this completely new world. And I'll also just mention, and this is super new, but there's been some talk of potentially aligning, you know, the gorge opening with the coast. So that kind of, there's like two paths for people to go crazy in instead of just one, which might help a bit. But that obviously, that would take a lot of people agreeing on stuff that we haven't really talked about or figured out yet. So, but a potential idea that's been thrown out. So, but yeah, I have been and will continue to talk to and work with Visit Hood River folks. I think the next week or two especially is going to be kind of the crux of what does that look like with the phase one plan, and or as we start to figure out what phase two even means. But happy, I can't answer anything, but happy to take questions.
I know that Lincoln City or Lincoln County is starting a discussion on reopening. I heard that today. I don't know how, you know, they're just starting to get people together because the whole county closed at once. All the cities and all the county commissioners and city councils and mayors all met when they closed down, and they did it all together unanimously. And so they are starting some discussions now, I heard today on that. Others? Okay. I think we can adjourn the work session. It is, oh,
7:40. And we will open the regular council meeting. We don't agenda additions or corrections for that for the regular session, Rachel?
We have none, Mayor.
Okay. We have a consent agenda that has council meeting minutes from two different dates and an OLCC permit application for Hood River Taqueria. Does anyone want to make a motion on that or has any questions about those things?
I mean, I will make a motion. I just did want to mention Jen said she could change it without formal stuff, but just a change on page 19 of my estimate on the LID being $500,000 to $1 million, not $1 million to $1.5 million. But I don't think that needs to be in the minutes itself. So I am going to move to approve the consent agenda as is.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
I will second it.
And we have a second from Jessica. Any additional discussion? Okay, I'm going to roll call vote. Megan?
Yes.
Jessica?
Yes.
Eric?
Yes.
Tim?
Aye.
Gladys?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
And chair votes yes. All right, we've approved the consent agenda. Third quarter financial performance report, Will.
Thank you, Mayor and City Council. So the third quarter performance report includes financial data through March 31st, and it's really our first glimpse at the impacts that COVID-19 is going to have on our budget. And this quarterly report, you'll for linkage to the budget process that we're in right now, this is how the beginning fund balance for 2021 was calculated, and it's off of these projections. So pulling it up, we see the first, as expected and as built into the 2021 budget, the first and most heavily impacted revenue is going to be transient room tax. We saw that down in preliminary numbers, down 50%, and it's built into the estimates to close to be down 80% for the rest of this fiscal year. Parking revenues were also some of the first to show real significant downturns, with parking fine revenue down 70% and meter receipts down about a third in March. Although some of that could be just timing of coins going to the bank and also some turnover in our parking enforcement officers. So we'll watch that closely as well. And just to sort of generally in those estimates to close, I budgeted in the pessimistic scenarios, but just let the trends run on local marijuana tax and liquor tax. Even though we may see an uptick in that, I sort of left that out of these to be conservative, but that could be some upside potential. We're also expecting the ambulance revenues will drop a little bit with transports being down about 20% from the prior year, but we haven't seen any indication in actual receipts yet. As we know, talked about ad nauseum that receipts from billing can lag months behind actual transports. So it's not even certain whether or not we'll see any of the financial impact from lower transports in this fiscal year, but I'm budgeting for a little bit of that. Any downward revision to the ambulance receipts is more than made up for with ground emergency medical transport reimbursements that we talked about during the Q2 financial report. That's a federal program that helps make up some of the cost that is unfunded from Medicare and Medicaid. And then we also received about $20,000 from CARES Act funding dedicated to ambulance service providers. And so that was a help as well. Expenditures, really steady as she goes, changed, but basically identical to the patterns that we've been seeing all year long. So no changes there. I budgeted in that we're probably will see some additional spend. We may go over budget and need a supplemental to access some contingency for some of the COVID related response activities that we've undertaken underneath the state of emergency, the biggest one being providing the school lunches over last spring break. But overall, you know, we saw what was expected to be a fairly strong surplus year end up being a minor deficit year, even with these pessimistic scenarios built into the general fund. Outside of the general fund, I'm most closely watching utility revenues, as we've made it, we've really been pushing out in all of our COVID messaging that if you're having a cash crunch, feel free to, there will be no penalty, there will be no discontinuation of service. You can not pay your utility bill, and you'll have through the state of emergency plus 60 days to become current on your utility charges before there will be any negative consequence whatsoever. And so with that messaging that we've been pushing out since the beginning of this state of emergency, I was really bracing to see what our accounts receivable balance would do in the utility, in our utility funds, and nothing, really absolutely nothing. No, you know, seasonally will go up much higher than the small uptick that we saw in March and April's numbers. So far so good. We'll see what next month has to hold for that. But right now I don't, we're not seeing any cash flow issues in the utilities. Within the road fund is our other largest major revenue source outside of the general fund is gas taxes. Both state and local didn't show any signs of weakening as of yet. But again, there's a lag from when the taxes are received versus when they flow through ODOT to us. So as people drive less, we consequently should see this revenue source dip. However, over the long term, I feel comfortable keeping 2021 expectations as is, because with gas so cheap, once we do open up, that's going to be a countervailing pressure pushing up revenues, because it's gas tax is not a percentage of the sales price. It's a flat number of cents per gallon. So if gas is very cheap, and that will be counter to all of the COVID-related restrictions that are keeping people more stagnant, will be also cheap gas incentivizing people to use more of it. I think those two, we just don't know which one of those forces is really going to win out over the long term. So with that, I'll answer any questions that you have about the third quarter financial report.
Well, this might have been from a previous one and I just can't remember, but the overspending in fire, is that from a particular cause?
Yeah, so a big portion of that is ambulance transports and the overtime. We also had a fair number of just absences, injuries, other absences that needed to be backfilled with overtime. So luckily the overages in ambulance revenue more than offset that overage in fire and EMS spending. So that's definitely going to be a year-end cleanup item that you'll see in the next supplemental budget, is recognizing that ambulance revenue over expectations and applying that to fire EMS overtime.
So ambulance is charged to both fire and EMS and not just EMS?
Well, so that's a big piece of it, is the EMS side. No, we do charge overtime, like ambulance transport overtime specifically to EMS. I believe both of them are going over budget. And then the fire side is also compensated absence or just absences and backfill overtime for that.
Okay, thank you.
We're seeing both of those happening at the same time. Luckily, the ambulance revenue is enough to cover both.
Other questions? All right. Do you need a motion or just an acceptance of the third quarter financials? Or
that's it. Informational item only. It's just a report and files. No action needed. Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much, Will. Appreciate it. All right. Report of officers. Let's see. Who do we still have on? Chief Damien, did you have anything?
I have nothing to add.
Okay, and Chief Holste?
And nothing here.
Okay. Dustin?
Planning Commission meeting via Zoom on Monday. We will have a quasi-judicial hearing, our first one in the post-COVID environment, as well as some of the parking matters that you all talked about being kicked off before Planning Commission.
Great, thank you. Wade, Public Works?
No, not really. I will say I did start contact with ODOT regarding the use right-of-way that was discussed earlier. Very high level, getting pointed in the right direction. That's about all.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate it. Did you have anything else, Rachel, that you needed for us today or not?
No, thank you, Mayor McBride, counselors.
Okay, thank you. So I guess we're to mayor call, and then we'll do council call. Lots of phone calls still for me with different groups, the emergency office, the emergency operations center, a couple times a week. Forest Service will be Friday, I believe. And lots of good information. It's going to be real interesting to see what's going to happen when we get this phase one going on. I think just business will not be as usual, even the businesses that are going to be opening to some extent. It's not going to be business as usual. The other thing that I've been doing is I've had a conversation. Rachel previously had met with Mark Thomas and Sarah Kellums, I can't remember who else, but regarding the homeless situation. And Paul Blackburn, our previous mayor, had put together some people to discuss and talk about potential solutions for the homeless situation in Hood River. And right now, because of COVID, because of money that has come in, I think up until sometime this week, every single homeless person in Hood River has been housed. So that's, you know, kind of a milestone. Well, it is a milestone for Hood River to have had the funding to do that. Now, I believe that funding goes away at the end of this week. And people that are being housed will not have housing, but it was kind of a marker in the sand. And so Rachel and I talked about it a little bit. And then I've talked to Mark Thomas. He's also talked to... actually, Rich McBride, my husband, who is working with Mid-Columbia Community Action Council. And so we're all going to get together and have a meeting and just talk about this milestone that's happening right now. It looks like Providence is going to have some funding to potentially help with some capacity around what we might be able to do. The city's put money in to help with the homeless shelter in the winter previously, and we still have that in the budget. And Providence has some money now, and they've gotten some money through COVID, and there may be some more money coming through Mid-Columbia Community Action. And so, it's just a conversation at this point, but I'll keep you guys informed on what's going on with the potential to help more with the homeless population. And it's, extremely important right now when we have COVID happening, because it can spread like wildfire in the homeless community. So if there's some way we can ramp that up during this time, because COVID's not going to be over next week, that it's timely now to be discussing that. And that's all I have. Let's see, Jessica?
I already mentioned the new EDA funding that could benefit the region as we work at a long-term recovery from ACED, but city council specific things, I'm just trying to keep an eye open for if there are funding streams that I see that could benefit the city, but otherwise I don't think I have other updates.
Thanks. Gladys?
I don't have any council specific updates. Just reminding folks to wash their hands for 20 seconds if you're going to go out in public. Please, please, please wear a mask to protect yourself, to protect others, especially those who are vulnerable, our vulnerable populations in our community. Practice social distancing as much as possible. And reach out to your healthcare professionals if you have any questions in regards to testing or general information about COVID.
Tim?
Not much here. I did last week participate in the Hood River County School District Budget Committee. They approved a budget that was probably more of what they termed like a framework because they're faced with some very potentially serious budgetary consequences of the COVID situation. One of the things I'm wondering is, well, I know that we still have to continue through to our budget committee process, but as soon as we can make them aware if we're going to follow through on the urban renewal suspension, if we could let them know, that probably would help them in their planning.
I think they have the biggest chunk of that.
Rachel? Well, I was just looking for Will. Oh, there he is. Yeah, we do have that. We are planning on that. Will, anything you want to add there?
Yeah, it's required in the process to confer. So the plan is we're going to take it through budget committee. If it makes, if the proposal makes it all the way to the approved, then I am going to send a certified letter to all the overlapping districts with their estimated revenue impact from the action and ask them to send any testimony or feedback that the City Council and Urban Renewal Agency Board should have when they formally adopt the budget. And I think that will meet the requirements of the to meet and confer with the overlapping districts.
So am I to take that their portion of it would be larger than our $250,000?
Much larger, yeah, but
that would be welcome news for them.
But it functionally will have almost no impact, as it will get normalized for property tax revenue based state funding. So it's a big number on paper, but it will just basically be offset with lower state funding.
Goes into the state pot. And then it gets divided.
No, which sorely needs it as well right now. So yeah. I think all school districts need the help. Yeah.
Sorry, and I don't want to interrupt Tim's thing, but while we're on this, have we informed all of the overlapping districts that Columbia Cascade is not collecting for here on out and that they're also getting that bump, or have we not told them yet?
We've been saying that for quite a long time. I couldn't tell you like checkbox roster that every single one, but it's been made, we've been, even all the way back to Steve Wheeler, has been communicating consistently that this is the year that Columbia Cascade stops collecting.
Mm-hmm. And I think we've heard from almost all of them already asking, just to clarify, because they had heard it for so many years, so.
And I do want to also say that, we won't have hit max, this is the caveat I've been telling all the overlapping districts. We won't have perfectly on the nail hit our maximum indebtedness. It's just that we can't go another full year, full bore, we'll overshoot our maximum indebtedness. So, but we will have, if we want to, in FY21-22, the ability to fine tune a partial collection if we want to, if there's an important investment in the downtown.
Thank you.
Eric?
Thank you. I guess two things. First, I guess a regular business type item. You've heard me say before that on the ODOT STIP fund, I've been trying to, it's probably a fool's errand, but I've been trying to coalesce a group to try to at least somehow use this, this ACT position that I and others have to try to revisit some equity issues, using that term very loosely in terms of those funds. That seems to have clearly taken sort of second seat to all the other issues happening with the state and the COVID, et cetera. And I got a really long email from Kimberly Dimwitty last week that talks about a whole bunch of different things. I'm just going to read aloud one sentence because I think it sort of sums up where ODOT's going to be as a result of COVID and other issues. And I guess I'm not holding my breath, and I would not encourage you to hold your breath either relative to being able to somehow pull this STIP rabbit out of the hat. But she says, quote, "To simplify a complicated story, unless we take proactive steps to bring our resources and expenditures into alignment, around the year 2024, ODOT will not have enough state highway fund resources to cover the costs of operating the agency." So in light of that backdrop, I guess I've sort of reset my expectations, and I sort of wish we had this simple world where I was out there trying to just get Hood River County money. But that's just not, I'm not sure how realistic I'm not giving up on it, but I just think, we haven't even had an ACT meeting, I don't think, in 2 months. So that is where it is. And then unrelated to that, I guess, going back to our discussion about how the city can help businesses, I had desired to make one further point. Maybe I'll just use this as an opportunity to do so, which is, I think, to congratulate Hood River County for taking the thoughtful step of trying to move the county into the phase one of the sort of COVID reaction. I read the entire submission by the county, and clearly is a data-driven process. It wasn't some emotional reaction. It was a very thoughtful, data-driven process where the county had to demonstrate certain safety-oriented metrics in order to basically apply to the governor for this first phase. And I think that was the right move, and I commend the county for doing that. And I guess to sort of build on that, I think really to my mind, the best thing the city can do is to sort of help that process along however it can. Because I think what the businesses need from us is not money to put up plastic shields or whatnot. I think they can figure those things out on their own. It's just helping them get reopened when the timing is right and in the right way. So that's all.
Thanks, Eric. Mark?
So I just want to, I don't have very much. I want to commend Rachel and her team for staying on top of this thing. It's impressive, and it's hard, and there's always more to do than get done, but I'm impressed with how we're focusing on communications and teamwork with other entities and stuff, so that's great. Just a little thing, you know, I work for one of the small tech companies in town, and our company is being fine. We're all working from our home. We're not, you know, there's no business risk with our company. And from what I've heard of other small tech companies is basically the same, that business proceeds, we're all being safe, we're annoying our family members, but proceeding, you know, that part of our economic engine is running efficiently, and so hopefully that keeps up. And then the last teeny bit of good news is I would have had to be in Florida right now if it wasn't for this, so I'm at least a tiny bit thankful for this. That's all I got.
Thanks, Mark. Megan?
I guess more question, but is Latino Advisory Committee meetings are on hold at this point, or?
Yeah.
Okay, so I shouldn't plan on the one on the 28th?
No.
Sounds good.
Just to clarify, all non-essential meetings are, yep, and all committee meetings.
I should
are
know that from, yeah, our emergency declaration. So, fair. Yep. Thanks. Then I don't think I have anything else. I just appreciate all the work that has been going on for the last 2 months with the city and in the community to try and keep things in control.
I wanted to give a, I see that Carrie Greer is on the call. Thank you for listening in, Carrie, to the very end of the meeting. And
I know that Pacific Power, she's the representative from Pacific Power, have been working diligently to decouple us from the PSPS group to be shut off. And I believe they're at that point to be able to take the city out of the group that would have to be shut off in Hood River County. And I just wanted to give her a shout out that to thank you for your work and your company's work to be able to decouple the electricity for the city from those other areas so that we will not have to be in the public power shutoff. So thanks, Carrie, for the work you're doing on that. Really good news. I'm sure we'll have more presentation on that. But with COVID, a lot of things aren't happening quite as fast as we were hoping with that. But I know that that's in the works with them. And so I wanted to give her a thank you and let you guys know, too. I totally kind of spaced out on that had or is in the works to happen as we speak. So I want to give her a thank you on that. If there's nothing else, I think we'll adjourn. Anything else? All right, it is 8:05. We will adjourn our meeting. Thanks, everyone. Appreciate it.